behind the groove.
BFBSUK.
Now we're on to our final guest on the program today. In fact, he's one of Britain's finest jazz musicians. And to give strength to that statement, he's just been chosen as the BBC Jazz Musician of the Year. Digby Fairweather, welcome to BFBSUK.
Nice to be here.
Right, nice to have you along with us. I gather that your strength is trumpet cornet.
That's great.
Yes, not something a lot of people are familiar with. The cornet, yes. The trumpet, yes. But a combination of the two.
That's true, yes. It's a funny old instrument, and quite often people do come up and ask about it. It's actually a cornet body with a trumpet bell stuck on the end, so that you get a combination of sounds which is halfway between the cornet and the trumpet, hence the trumpet cornet.
Mm. Why did you choose that particular instrument?
Well, it was a variety of reasons. One is that an old jazz trumpet player years ago, jazz cornetist rather, Bix Beiderbecke, was a great influence on myself. And therefore I played the cornet for a long time, but the cornet's a very gentle little instrument. It's rather hard to make yourself heard if you're in a noisy pub or wherever. So I wanted something that was a little bit more powerful, so I came on the trumpet cornet, and that's how it happened.
All right, you didn't choose the trumpet by itself because you were in love with the cornet, really?
Yes, that's right. Yes. The trumpet was a bit too noisy.
How did you react to being chosen BBC Jazz Musician of the Year?
Well, I picked myself up off the floor.
Were you surprised, really?
I was very surprised, because they've had some very good... Well, some wonderful musicians have been chosen in previous years. Last year, I think, was George Chisholm, who I think your listeners will probably be familiar with, a trombone player, who does a lot of general entertaining work as well. The year before was John Dankworth, and I think the year before that was Don Lusher.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a lucky lad to follow such eminent gentlemen.
Yeah, how old are you, by the way? Can I ask you that?
Somewhere around 33.
33?
Yeah.
Young to be jazz musician. I mean, you imagine jazz musicians to be... You know, old and gnarled, like Eggy Lay, you know, who works here at BFBS UK, and makes strange signs from the control room.
Yes, we're going to be cut off in our prime in a minute. Aging beauties, you mean? Yes, that's true. I think that most of the great jazz musicians, until very recently, it looked as if jazz might be dying.
Mm-hmm.
Because when the Beatles came along, naturally, and indeed the whole rock and roll boom, most of the young people bought guitars because they heard guitars every day and because they were told... That pop music was the music, which of course it was. But latterly, we've had a resurgence of young people coming back into jazz for a variety of reasons, which I won't go into unless we want to talk about it.
Well, sure, let's talk about it.
Well, things like the National Youth Jazz Orchestra, which was founded by Bill Ashton a few years ago, rounded up a lot of kids who might otherwise have just mooched along in brass bands or taken up the guitar. And the National Youth Jazz Orchestra, NYJO, they call it for short, loosed a lot of marvellous musicians onto the scene, all under 25, and there's an awful lot of young, good Dixieland players playing. In fact, our fine, benevolent friend Eggy Lay, who's next door on this should cheer him up a bit after what you said earlier, his son Martin is a very, very good young jazz trombone player in the traditional jazz style, and it seems that somehow, I don't know how, young people have come back to traditional jazz, despite the rather large preponderance of pop music on the media. I don't know how they've done it, but somehow they've managed to earth it out from somewhere, and it seems to be coming back again.
Well, that's good news. Now, the world is full of coincidences, and here's one for us, because the very first record you made, I think, was actually in this very studio?
In this very studio. Mm. I was sitting precisely where I'm sitting now, and I think the drums were about 2.5 yards left of you.
All right, who was playing the drums, do you remember?
Don Bishop was enclosed in one of those little booths that they used to enclose the drummers in.
Uh-huh.
Looks a bit like a fish booth, you know. There was Eggy Lay on soprano, who you'll hear, plays marvellously, and Terry Pitts, I think. Terry Pitts was certainly on trombone. Hugh Rainey on banjo, who's a fine banjo player. This was at the tail end of the jazz boom, or a little later.
Hmm.
And Eggy and Hugh Rainey, who, as I say, was playing the banjo, had moved out of the Essex area, very kindly wrote me in.
And there was also Peter Thornett, I think, on...
It was Pete Thornett on bass and vocals,
that's right, yeah. And we ought just to make clear that Eggy Lay, soprano, you said, not singing, soprano sax.
Absolutely.
And this is how it went.
Thank you.
be some changes made. And that was a session in 1972 in this very studio. And it sounded like you had a lot of fun there, didn't
you? Yeah, we certainly did. We had a lot of fun. It was actually the first time I'd ever been inside a studio. And I remember going inside there and inside here, getting right into this room and enjoying every minute of that. And always thinking, well, studios are easy, you know, marvellous. Until I finally did my first BBC Jazz Club and finding out just how difficult it is being in a studio.
Why? What particularly about that occasion frightened you to death?
Well, I remember BBC Jazz Club, which is a very long and venerable programme on the BBC. It's been going for about 30 years. It's done in a semi-live situation with an audience, which means that you can't go back if you happen to drop any kind of a note or anything. You know, it's all got to be right first time. And the combination of a studio and an audience, I remember sort of disappearing down the end of the trumpet and not emerging for half an hour at least.
Yeah, but I guess nowadays it's a lot easier for you. You take it in your stride.
Oh, yes, it becomes easier over the years, but it's rather like growing up, you know, it takes a long time.
Mm. Do you come from a musical family, actually?
Yes, I was very lucky. My mother, who's still alive, is a fine pianist and has a lot of very musical tendencies. My father, who's not no longer with us, unfortunately, was a cellist and a conductor and a music teacher before the war.
Mm.
And after the war, he maintained a sort of a great interest in music, although he never actually played live again after about 1950.
So there we are. You had a musical background in the family.
Yeah,
but
certainly
it was jazz right from the word go, was it?
It was for me, not for my father. Uh-huh. He was a classical man, and we had the usual youthful confrontations about it, you know, because when I was coming up, jazz was rather like the pop music of today, you know, because pop music hadn't been born then, really. And we used to have a few arguments, but it got, when rock and roll came along, he thought jazz was so infinitely preferable musically that he actually got to quite like it.
Well done, son, the right decision, yes. What influenced your decision, actually, to commit yourself full-time to jazz, though?
Well, that was really because about 3.5 years ago, I'd been very lucky and had a lot of encouragement from good musicians, and I was working 7 nights a week in London and travelling down to Southend every day to work in the public library down there, in which I ran the music and arts division. And it got to be a bit of a strain after a while, and I thought, well, as the works is very healthy at the moment, I'll give it a year and see what happens. And 3.5 years, here I am, still paying the rent.
Still paying the rent, and making the music too. By Duke Ellington and Mills It don't mean a thing if it ain't got swing. And that was Digby Fairweather, you heard, on the trumpet cornet there, doing all that clever stuff.
Flattery
stuff, you know.
Thank you.
I mean, it sounds very, very busy, that kind of music. I mean, the way you were playing it then, very busy for you.
Well, it's not as busy as it sounds, you know. I mean, jazz really is like a succession of tricks, you know. And as you go along, you pick up what they call sort of like licks, you know. And quite honestly, a lot of the stuff that sounds as if it's made up on the spur of the moment probably has been played, a few hundred times before.
Mm. Picking up a lick sounds very nasty. What do you mean by a lick?
Well, what I mean by that is some sort of original phrase which the musician picks up for himself and uses as something that by which he's identifiable.
Where do you play most of your things nowadays, by the way?
Mostly around town.
Yeah.
I'm working in a lot of London clubs. Fortunately, I'm very lucky to work in the... am I allowed to tell the name of the club?
I should think so.
The Pizza Express in London, which is run by Peter Boisot.
I know.
And I work there every Tuesday with a marvellous jazz band called the Pizza Express All-Stars, which is seven of Britain's very finest musicians. And I work also a lot around the rest of the London scene, which is healthy. And luckily enough, I travel around England as well, so I've really got a marvellous time.
And what about the presentation of this BBC Jazz Musician of the Year award? Now, that must have been quite an occasion, wasn't it?
It was wonderful, yeah. It was set up and took place last week sometime at the Wigmore Hall in London. And I was very fortunate in that it was set up to be what they called an all-winners concert, so I had the chance to play with George Chisholm, who was magnificent, and Don Lusher and Eddie Thompson, and lots of marvellous names, and it was a great experience.
Interesting, George Chisholm being magnificent, because we look upon him as being a bit of a clown of the piece, don't we? He always wears funny gear, but he's a great musician too, behind all that.
Oh, he is really, yes. He began many years ago, before the war, when he was a teenager, playing with people like Fats Waller. He was invited to take part in the recording session that Fats did when he was over here from America, which was a great honour, when he was about 18 or 19, I think. And he's been a magnificent jazz player ever since.
Is there somebody that you would like to play alongside and haven't had the chance so far?
Oh, hundreds. I suppose an obvious example would be the great American players. I'd like the chance to play with, so many. Often it isn't practical, but since some of the London clubs have come into existence, many Americans have visited this country, and it has become possible to realise some of the dreams. You know, I played with Ruby Braff, who's a beautiful American trumpet player, a couple of weeks ago, and that was a marvellous experience, because you learn so much.
All right.
Richard, you know, in the course of a couple of hours, all of a sudden you're going back, and you either practice or throw the thing under the bed.
Well, there we are, Jazz Musician of the Year, but still willing to learn. We've been talking with Digby Fairweather, and he doesn't only play the music, he writes it too, and this is one of his own compositions, Going Out Steppin'. That's Digby Fairweather and Going Out Steppin'. Digby, nice to have met you, and thanks for coming in, and the very best of luck.
It's been a pleasure, Richard, and thanks for having me on the show.
All right. Also, going step in with us today were Wilma Patterson from Glasgow, Martin Seymour Smith on Novels and Novelists, and Sandra Bowler on Weddings from Brides Magazine. And I hope you enjoyed the programme. Why don't you join me again tomorrow, Wednesday? Incidentally, the producer today was Rick Lunt, no less. Ron Smith on controls, Carol Straker on music, and Julia Pickering on the tea. This is Richard Vaughan. Have a great day. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye now.